just at least for me to start, some of your talk today was, of course, about AKLNG and the relationship with China. Just to kind of start off big, how is the relationship with the Trump administration? And I'm coming at this from the angle of, while there seems to be a desire from the Trump administration to get a big deal and a big project going to even out those trade deficits and things, there's also this kind of penny ante game going on with different tariffs on things. And what's the governor's office's role in that? Is like a mediator between the two parties, or how is that working?
Well, it's a matter of our role is to continue to do what we said, a commitment we made on November 9th in the Great Hall in China, when we signed on with the participants that we signed on with. So we continue to advance the project. So that's where most of our focus is. And we certainly take input from Washington as well as from Beijing, and both of them seem to want the same thing. They would like to see this continue to advance somewhat on a bit of an accelerated schedule. And so that's a good thing. And so we are working with both in that regard. So we really don't, you know, aren't directly involved in the trade issue, we have something that helps it significantly. It's the only $1 trillion project out there. And when you get the $1 trillion, you take $8 to $10 billion a year. There's 200 years of supply. Cut that in half, just to be conservative. 100 years supply is $1 trillion. So, so they see that as a significant piece in the puzzle, if you will.
Is it difficult to think about these things, because this is a relatively long-term project, but in the interim there are these sort of short-term other things going on? Is it difficult to find balance between those two?
Well, I mean, if we're going to supply energy to Alaskans and to the market for 100 years, that is a long-term project. You know, the steps, nothing has been held up as a result of anything that's happening. You know, we're going through the regulatory process now, and so that will continue uninhibited by the what's happening back and forth on the trade issue.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything, Ben? Go ahead.
Well, I guess kind of a longer term, maybe a philosophical question about the gas line is: do you see any ways from a policy perspective to avoid kind of repeating history with the oil pipeline, where it sort of created a dependence on this commodity, and it became, you know, 70% of the government's revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see many ways we can avoid just kind of jumping from one volatile commodity to another?
Well, I think we've done that. I think we've done that when Senate Bill 26 passed. It took a slice of the earnings, permanent fund earnings, to help stabilize the economy. And the problem is, so that brought our dependency on oil down from about 90% down to about probably about 30%, 35%. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty significant change in itself. The second thing is that I think we've learned what not to do on some of the things that took place on the oil side.
Mm-hmm.
Spending ramped up even as recently as 2012. I mean, 2012 was the last year we had a balanced budget. It's been upside down since then. Just no one was talking about that. So I think we've learned from that. I think that I think lawmakers have learned from that, and we put some things in place that I don't see us going there again. So I don't think I think it's a different opportunity with the gas than it was with the oil. And the other piece of it is the oil certainly needed to be refined. And we had some refineries. Now we only have two refineries or three refineries in Alaska. One here on the peninsula with Tesoro Endeavor now. One in ASRC has one in Valdez, as well as one in Fairbanks.
When oil prices dropped way down, that really helps people to sharpen their focus on budget issues.
Mm-hmm.
How do you maintain that focus as prices are trending up and are likely to continue trending up? How do you maintain that focus when it becomes a little bit easier to say yes to all the things that come through?
Well, I think we have to have a recognition of what got us to where we are today. And I think that it's a matter of not losing sight of the challenges that we found ourselves in. I mean, I had to close 40 state facilities, 3,000 fewer state jobs, 100 state-funded programs were either eliminated completely or modified significantly. Those were not easy things to do, and Alaskans felt the impact of that. So, I think that history is something that we always have to know, otherwise you're doomed to repeat it. But the other piece of it is we're not out of the woods yet. We're not done. We still have, so it depends on how that last 20% is dealt with. And if it dealt with some sort of a broad-based tax, that'll be a check and balance. So part of the problem we've had, there's been no real check and balance on the budget, and because we're completely disconnected from it. So,
yeah.
I dislike taxes with a passion, but I, even worse than that, I hate to see us go into a fiscal spiral that we've now climbed out of. So
mm-hmm.
I certainly wouldn't support mm-hmm. Major spending as a result of additional revenue.
Here today we're talking a lot about how to diversify the local economy and create jobs locally in rural areas where a lot of the infrastructure isn't in place. And I don't remember if it was you or the other presenter who talked about the internet being the electrification of the 21st century. So much of that effort was done through, there was a lot of government effort involved in that, or the most private it got was cooperative efforts for
mm-hmm.
electrification.
Mm-hmm.
As we sit here in July of 2018, there haven't been a lot of market solutions to internet access for rural areas. And you touched on it briefly in your presentation, but what role is there for state level investment in that, in order to provide that baseline where local communities do have the infrastructure necessary to sort of provide for themselves?
We did a cost estimate of what it would be to for connectivity throughout the state. It was about $1 billion, and the main thing that, which is a really huge number, but you look at what was spent down on the savings before finally they made the decision that we filed 3 and a half years ago, $14 billion. And so, wow. I mean, you just look what could have been done with that. I'm not a big believer of looking in the rearview mirror all the time and saying, I wish we'd done that or that. But that's one of the reasons why we wanted to stop the bleeding early on, to be able to preserve that $14 billion. And it's going to be, I mean, you're absolutely correct. The challenge is, the area that needs it the most has the smallest population. I mean, you don't see McDonald's in certain parts of,
right.
Until you see a certain population and whatnot. So I understand that as a result of that, it's going to require some federal participation for sure. And there's a lot of discussion about rural America not having the connectivity. We think we're the only ones that we're not. There's a fair number of the other states that don't either. So, I think we're going to get there with certainly the federal government is the lead, some participation with the state, and then certainly those on the consumer basis. But
mm-hmm.
the problem is that if we say the good news is you have broadband, the bad news is there's no way you're going to afford it, we really haven't accomplished anything yet.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Ben?
Well, one phrase you used in your talk just now that I think you said came from Mike Navarre was the Alaska disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping you could elaborate a bit more on that.
Sure.
What's disconnected there?
What's disconnected is that in most economies, when you grow jobs, there's revenue associated with those jobs. This goes and helps fund the new school that has to be built, the new public safety, the new roads, those kinds of things. And we don't have that connection. We don't have it with any sort of broad-based revenue. And so that's the part that's missing. Some people have said, well, we need to have more high-paying jobs in Alaska. Well, that's great, but that doesn't connect over to, right now, if it doesn't involve a barrel of oil something coming out of the ground or the ocean, it doesn't create any revenue at all. So that's the disconnect. Most places, as the economy grows, the revenues, provide services grows, parallel with that. We don't have that. It's completely separate.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I wanted to ask, and maybe this is a bit more of a candidate walker question, looking at some of the fisheries issues this year,
mm-hmm.
and in particular out in Prince William Sound, the hatchery issue with the hatchery pinks and the effect that might be having on wild stocks, and then, of course, the low returns for the commercial fisheries. Do you feel like the Board of Fish process right now is set up appropriately to address those kinds of in-season concerns, or other changes that might be made that might be able to do a better job of that?
Well, those are decisions that are should be based upon science as well. So it's not just a can you get the votes kind of thing. I think it's, it goes beyond that. I know they're looking at that as far as what the impact is on the fisheries as a whole as a result of more fish, and so I know that's being looked at. So I think that's it's appropriate to take a look at that. We ought to know. And is there science? I mean, how much science do we have? Can we rely upon to answer that question?
Well, and that gets back to some of those budget issues we were talking about earlier and staff reductions, because you can never have enough scientists out there asking questions. And so where's that balance point of we're not funding ourselves enough to even answer the questions that we need to
right.
maintain the sorts of production in the industries that do thrive here?
Right. Well, fisheries is a good example. I mean, that budget was cut 30%. And, we're starting to build back. A group came to us supported legislation to create another $9 million, and so we've been able to increase that budget a bit. But you're right. I mean that's a Fish and Game is probably the best example of that. We make decisions about when to fish. That's an important part of the fishing process, is when you can fish. And so, that's my concern about those that talk about, we can cut here. Tell me where. Where is it? Where is it when you have not? Is it education you want to take $1 billion from? We want to take it from natural resources somehow. I mean, we don't have. We've come a long ways.
Mm-hmm.
We brought down the budget down to what it was approximately 10 years ago, and the staffing levels are down to about 2007 levels as
mm-hmm.
well. So we've gotten back to before the big run up to the 2010, 11, 12 budgets of.
Mm-hmm.
of about double what they are right now.
Mm-hmm. Another candidate question would be: Are you worried at all that that opinions and issues surrounding the permanent fund is going to be like sort of a litmus test and the one driving issue of this? Is that a concern that there will be a lot of single issue voters on
mm-hmm.
one side or the other of that?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that will be the case, and I guess what I had to make a decision on what is best for me or what's best for the state. And the best thing for me would have been not do anything at all and just kick the can down the road and hope I'm not in office when the last dividend check goes out, because we've overdrawn that, and just do nothing. That's sort of what I inherited, and I don't believe in that. I don't believe that my political future should be at a higher level of importance in the future of the state. And so I was born here, I'm gonna die here, I'm not passing through. This is where I am, and so it's important to me that the dividend program continue on. It's important for me that we protect the fund itself, and at the rate we were spending, the rate we were losing money at $12 million a day, we went through all the savings accounts. The last one left was earnings, a permanent fund earnings. If that is wiped out, then they're really in a world of hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So. I wish it could have happened $14 billion earlier than it did, but I did what I did based upon knowing that if someone didn't stand up and did do the hard decision, it was not going to happen. And so while the Republicans did vote before to reduce it's a matter of restructuring the permanent fund. The permanent fund historically has been used for one thing, has been pulling out the dividend. Now it's something that's been used for two things, pulling out the dividend as well as helping fund government services, education, transportation, public safety, etc. So suddenly we had two uses for that earnings, whatnot. So it had to be structured in such a way that if you took out too much between the dividend and the public services, suddenly you're going to go underwater. And we couldn't do that as far as if you have a retirement account that's earning, 5% and you're pulling out 12% a year, pretty soon you're going to be having a much smaller retirement
mm-hmm.
result. So I had no patience for hiding behind that issue and staying away from it. I mean, that's one of my jobs, is to step up and show leadership. And if that's the if that's my political demise, I can live with that, because what I can't live with is not doing something because it wouldn't be politically popular. That's part of the problem we have in our state and in our country, quite honestly, is everybody's so busy trying to make popular decisions that we find ourselves in a significant mess. Governor Jay Hammond talked about this in one of his speeches. If we don't change our ways we're going to end up, there'll be a day of reckoning in Alaska, and there is. I didn't know I was going to be governor on that day of reckoning, but I am, and in some respects, I'm glad I am. It has not been pleasant, believe me. It's been the most difficult decision I've ever made, knowing that those that are most in need of that additional money of the permanent fund, which stayed in the permanent fund, it wasn't spent, it's still there, earning interest, growing. We knew we had to grow the fund. It was a critical thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm well aware of the disproportionate impact on lower income. That's why I submitted 9 pieces of legislation at that time to sort of spread it across equally, and of that 9, none of them passed at that time. Ultimately, some passed, and since then, but not initially. So,
yeah,
I would not sit back and, you know, I had to turn, you know, everybody wanted $100 and $200 oil, and I was trying to turn, you know, wishbones into backbones as far as voting on tough votes. So I was very proud of the vote.
Something that's come up.
Time for one more question.
Okay, just a quick follow up on that same topic is in terms of changing the structure. I'm hearing from other candidates for office this notion of the PFD deserves to go to quote unquote real Alaskans. How do you view that opinion that there needs to be a change in how that permanent fund money is doled out via the dividend?
And what is the option?
Well, in an interview I had with our local senator, he was sort of lamenting I'll forget the name of the court case, but that found, you know, using years of residency as a marker for
Yeah.
So I mean, is this the time to start talking about who gets a dividend and why and how much?
You know, there certainly can be that discussion. That was a Zobel case that
yes,
you're referring to as, and it was based upon so much. Initially, started off at $50 per year of
mm-hmm.
residency, and that case would have been upheld, but it was retroactive. It had not been retroactive, then it would have been upheld, and whatnot. So, you know, I assume that the dividend will continue to be a discussion for some time, but I guess my concern is that it's used without being part of a full fiscal plan. And you just have to look at the whole fiscal plan and not just at that one piece. And I am a fierce defender of the permanent fund, and I want that to continue to do what it's what it was intended to do into perpetuity, and not just have a few high years of unsustainable draws. You know, it's very much like fish. You know, I mean, people get frustrated that they see fish in the water, why are we not catching every single fish we see? It's because, you know, we need the escapement. We need to have it, you know, for future years. And so it's very similar to that. If we overfish, over-harvest, it's going to impact future years. The same thing if we distribute the funds either to governmental services or dividends or whatever, greater than it can sustain, there's going to be an impact as a result of that. So I'm happy that it's risen to the legislature sets the amount. This year they set it at $1,600. I was pleased with that, and so that's the amount that'll be issued this year.